And we're live. Welcome back to another episode of the Diamond Download. We got Chase Diamond over here, Noe and Diamond. We got me over here in Miami, Cardinal Mason. I'm back in the city. I'm feeling good. I'm sweating. It's got to be like 100 something degrees right now. I'm just dying. Just filming content all day. Just good. How are you?
Yeah, dude, the weather in Miami is nice, but it's just humid. It's just kind of wet and a little sticky there. Where over here for us, it's probably in the 70s, although it feels hotter. Things are good, man. Just took a shower right before this. I'm on cloud nine. Things are good. Yeah, thanks.
You showered for this?
Yeah, I showered before. I had to wake up and kind of refresh for the camera.
Beautiful. I can't say the same. I don't remember the last time I've showered. Let's get into these topics over here. So number one, we got SendLane. So you have some exciting news. I would love for you to talk about, the news with SendLane. And maybe if there's a theme there, talk about the company. And then also I want to hear more about some of your little positions in companies. I think that's very interesting.
Yeah. So today on Twitter and social, I signed and announced that I'm an advisor of the board at SendLane. So really pumped, as a email guy, it's been this for a long time, like really cool to be part of a rocket ship. You know, they're growing really quick, doing some really cool things, great team. I just really vibe with the founder. He and I have been friends for about 4 years. We met through a course we did for Founder Magazine. And it's kind of just been a long time coming. We've been nurturing it. So yeah, really excited. They're great email SMS platform, taking on the likes of Klaviyo and others. And I don't know. I really like what they're doing. Great pricing, great team, great deliverability. And you should give them a chance. So I know you're a fan too. I'm a fan. And hopefully people listening to this will become fans.
Yeah, I was a fan before I even knew that you had, a piece of it. Like, I think like Jimmy just does such a great job. I know we've given Jimmy enough juice on here, but let's keep it going. Let's keep amping him. Shout out Jimmy for just being like a really, really solid, hands-on founder, like customer first founder. I think that he's going to do really well. Doesn't matter if he's building an ESP. Doesn't matter if he's building, he could be doing anything. I think he's just the type of dude to be successful. I want to see him nailing Twitter. I want to see him blowing up like you. How do we get Jimmy to blow up on Twitter?
He's starting, man. He's a little bit more like you, where he's not afraid to poke at people and kind of poke the bear and be a little polarizing. For me, I'm very kind of playing nice. So it's a little harder to go viral now, I feel like, on Twitter playing nice, but he's a little bit more like you. So I think he's doing a good job. And yeah, I literally just inked the deal like today. So like I had no stake, no financial benefit before. Now, if they sell, I have some financial stake and benefit. So I love what they're doing and it should be fun.
Nice, bro. Do you think that you being on the board is going to make their stock price go nuts?
I wouldn't say that alone. I hopefully it helps, hopefully it helps for their sake and mine. But I'm just really excited to be involved in a part of it and kind of spread the good word. So my role in coming on is like awareness, product feedback, and just insights. Like, what do brands want? What do marketers want? And really just trying to make it the best platform, possible.
That's perfect. Yeah. Because like, I don't know if Klaviyo has that same attitude. I don't think they really care about what we think. I think they're just building and they're super wealthy already. And I think they're good. I think they're good where they're at. Cause like, dude, the new editor, cause like the new editor for Klaviyo is god awful.
So bad.
I can't use it, bro. I don't. Sorry, go ahead.
I've been trying to use it and it's been tough. And again, no ill will or no bad blood for Klaviyo. They've been great, but it's just, I think they have different priorities now. Let's just say that. We still use them for some clients. SendLane is going to be partially a new home, but Klaviyo, SendLane are both great platforms. I don't want to say anything bad, but the platform editor on Klaviyo has been rough, to say the least.
Yeah. Yep. Imagine we both lose our accounts on Klaviyo. Anyway, okay. So talk more about you've been doing this for a minute. I know like back in the day you were doing some angel investing.
Yeah.
And in the last like year or so, it seems like people have been like, oh, maybe this Chase guy knows a thing or two about growing companies in the email space, or at least in D2C in general.
Yeah.
How do you think you got there? And like, what would be the path for like maybe someone else who's like up and coming to like replicate what you've done?
Yeah, that's a good question. For the first couple of years of doing this, like I had to write checks. Like the only way to get into a round or into a company was like put money in. And granted, they were small checks, right? 25 here, sorry, 2,500 here, 5K there, 10K, 20K, right? Like there were small checks, right? Just coming from me personally. So the first part of my career was just like trying to get access and trying to get visibility and try to get on the radar of the folks I wanted to be in front of. And also, you know, when you put on your LinkedIn or other platform, I'm an angel investor at X, Y, and Z company, you know, other people start reaching out with deal flow. So I just felt like it would be good for me to get involved. And now kind of things have changed where instead of me actually having to put money into companies, I'm getting gifted stock and equity and grants because as the platform's grown, right, I guess people care a little bit more about like my opinion and whatnot, which is still crazy and wild. But I think the path in which you do it is a couple of things. Like one is you have to become an expert in your domain. So for you, like you've really become known as like the copywriting guy, right? The D2C copywriting guy is you. I'm the email marketing guy, right? There's Facebook ad girl, right? Like Savannah Sanchez calls herself the social Savannah. She's really great at creative. Nick is really great at Facebook ads. So you have to kind of start branding yourself and creating really, really good content. And that comes from expertise and practice, right? And then over time, you know, the more that you get involved in the community, the more that you're using platforms, the more that you're speaking at events, the more that you're hosting events, the more that you do these things, everyone takes note. Like the community that we're in on D2C Twitter and D2C in general is really small. You know, people know the good from the bad and those that are really hungry and those that want to make a difference. So, you know, long-winded, it's like become an expert, talk about your expertise, give, and then maybe start making some small angel checks. And then I think hopefully things come inbound. And if not, go outbound, right? If someone's not coming to you, go to them.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right. Well, that's very good. I mean, I'm not really in the DC world. I'm more of like in the info world now. And those guys don't need capital. So I don't know if I'll be investing in anyone anytime soon. But if Jasper AI wants me to throw in a couple grand to add to the pile of 1.5 billion, then let me know, man. Let's make it 1.5 billion and $5,000. Okay.
Yeah. On that note, right? Like what I was kind of referring to was more like e-com SaaS, but to your point, right? Like in every single vertical and industry, there are thought leaders, there's influencers, there's celebrities, right? So for someone like you that was really deep into D2C and now is a little bit more kind of broad and general info, SaaS, kind of, you know, whatever needs copy, you're really good at it. You become really universal. There are companies in every space, you know, Jasper, for example, for you, or Copy AI. Maybe there's even like, for example, companies that sell sales platforms or sales software or tools for copywriters like Hemingway or, you know, any of the others that have that type of stuff. Grammarly, right? Those are great companies, not for you necessarily putting money into because they don't really need your money, but they would more want to utilize you as a strategic kind of influencer advisor where you know kind of what's happening. You have your finger on the pulse. You have distribution, right? You've got 340,000 people on TikTok. You got over 50,000 on Twitter. You've got a newsletter. If you start talking about something enough times, it doesn't necessarily mean that someone's going to use it, but people are at least going to consider it. And the more times they see it, the more familiar they're going to be. So yeah, I think this playbook, to your point, works for any vertical or industry. And it's probably actually even better for the industries outside of e-com because there's probably less and less people doing it, right? Like, I don't know if Jasper or Copy AI or Hemingway or Grammarly has influencers right now. I've never seen anyone do that. They have more affiliates.
Yeah. I think Dakota Robertson, I don't know if he's like signed, but they should sign him because he's, yeah. He does get work. All right, let's switch around number three, number two, because I want to end on a good note. All right, for the second one, where is it? I want to hear about your worst client ever. If you have a story like that or just some like client nightmares. And it could be like for the agency or it could be like, you know, for maybe someone you've worked with on like another thing you've whatever. Like I'm curious because people always talk about like bad agency experiences. I think we should really shed some light on bad clients.
Yeah, I mean, bad agency experience, bad clients, good agencies, good clients, like they all exist, right? There's no one or the other. I think there's like two that come to mind. One, and I'm not going to name any names. One was a couple of years ago, one of our first relatively large clients, I think they were doing eight figures. And this was probably maybe 3.5 to 4.5 years ago, give or take. They would just destroy us. They were just so rude, so mean, you know, just not polite, not kind, just would every opportunity they could, you know, if like a one little pixel was off, they would just destroy us. And we over-delivered for them. We did so much work, and just the team morale from a single client just destroyed everyone, right? So it's like the whole one bad apple spoils the bunch. Like, we ended up putting up with them for much longer than we should have, just because we were afraid. We didn't know what we were doing. We wanted the money. So we just had a really mean, rude client that, like, no matter what we did, good or indifferent, it was always the end of the world, right? And if everything's the end of the world, it just becomes depressing. I think that's one. And then two, more recently, there was a decent sized contract that we just signed with a client in the past couple of months. We spent months, you know, proving ourselves, months building things out, months negotiating, and we actually finally signed them. Dude, within 1 week of signing, like, we hadn't even gotten access to everything. We were over communicating. We had done a kickoff call. They literally kicked us out of every platform and fired us, but ghosted us. They never responded. And I think to this day, they still haven't responded. They signed like a 3 or 6 month contract. We spent months and months giving. We signed, you know, we had the kickoff call, and then we just got revoked from everything and ghosted. It was like the weirdest thing. So that one really stung, where it's like, we were super excited. We invested probably more time than we should have, and we just got ghosted. And we were really excited about the brand, really excited about the contract, and we haven't heard from them. So I think those two stand out.
Is there any sort of legal action you can take against those people? They're contractually a client. You should be able to, like, do something.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there is. At that point, we're just like, man, like, we're just going to take our losses, you know, take it on the chin and kind of move on. You know, I think, like, if we were a little bit more aggressive, or I don't know the right word, a little bit more, I guess, desperate, for lack of a better word, we probably could have or should have done something. But unfortunately, at this point, we just kind of moved on, and I don't know if we'll ever hear from them. It's kind of crazy.
Super weird, bro.
What about you?
I mean, I don't really have any terrible experiences with my own agency, but I do remember the structure. There was some awful brands that I had to work on. I knew it wasn't me being crazy, because, like, I talked to the team, and the team all were not fans, but, like, it puts you in a tough position as a founder or a partner of an agency, when it's like, you can't just fire every client you don't like.
Yeah.
Because you're a real business. Like, I could do that, like, with my own agency. Like, the reason I didn't really have any terrible client experience, because I'd just be like, all right, bye. Like,
yep.
Like, I don't care. I don't need their money. Cause, like, the agency was kind of like a side thing. You know what I mean? Like, I'm doing other stuff. And so, like, if I have someone who's, like, treating me or my team disrespectfully, like, you can go fly a kite, bro. Like, go play in traffic. Yeah. I don't care. Like, figure out someone else to work with. But, like, when you're, and also, like, if you get a reputation for someone who just, like, fires clients because, like, you don't like them, I think that spreads around and people don't, like, love that. So I don't know, man. I think, like, a lot of times it's just, like, brands who are super, super nitpicky, and that don't really know why. I feel like it's not usually when you're working with founders. It's usually when you're working with, like, a head of creative or, like, a marketing manager or something like that, who needs to justify their position and feels like, yo, this agency is doing, you know, basically my job for cheaper. I don't want to feel like they're better than me, so I need to make their job really hard so that I can report back to my boss telling them that I did a good job and that they're, you know, messing stuff up. I think that might be part of it, which is why, like, that's one of the cool things about working with smaller brands, is that you don't have that problem. Like, you don't have any of that middle bureaucracy there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. It's like a really fine line to walk as a owner of a business, where, you know, you want to obviously protect revenue, because revenue protects, you know, keeping the lights on and whatnot. But at the end of the day, like, you have to be for your people. So we kind of have, like, a formal, informal kind of checks and balance in place, where it's like, you know, if it happens once and it's a one-off, okay, you know, you kind of, like, you remember it, but you move on. And if it kind of happens 2 or 3 times, then you kind of have a conversation, right? One of the owners, the partners, or the heads of the teams kind of steps in, talks to the client, explains kind of where we're at. We see if we can resolve it. And if we can, great. You know, it was just a bump in the road. If you can't, you know, unfortunately, you have to just part ways. And it seems like it's like the coolest brands on paper, quote unquote, that are the ones that give you the hardest time. Like, we never worked with Nike, but I've heard about, like, Nike, for example, just like nickels and dimes. And it's so hard to work with because everyone wants to have that Nike logo on their website. And I think that might be, like, an extreme example, but I've just heard about that. And I don't want to say that any of the ones that we worked with, but I feel like the ones that I was, like, fanboying kind of when they first came in, from what I heard, I didn't work with them, ended up making me really have like kind of a bad taste in my mouth and disliking them after we worked with them, because the optics from the external was definitely different than the reality of the internal. So it's just interesting how that works.
Why do you think brands like that will just ghost you, like after becoming a client, like with no explanation? Like, was it something you did? Like, was it something the team did? Like, what is the psychology behind that?
I don't know. I'm a little bit removed. Like, this was something that I kind of heard through the grapevines, through the partners. Like, they were kind of saying like, hey, and it was a lead. So the reason they told me is it was a lead from me. It was one that we were really excited about. We closed them, whatever. I wasn't involved in the sale process. One of my partners was. And then he just like randomly sent me a note like, yo, have you heard from so-and-so? Like, we signed the contract last week. We did the kickoff call. They yanked us. They didn't say anything. We've sent them multiple calls, texts, emails. We haven't heard back. So I tried reaching out like, hey, you know, if you guys want to leave, that's cool. It's fine. We'd just love to understand like the rationale behind it. And I never heard back. So I honestly don't know. I mean, there wasn't enough time for us to screw it up, right? Like, you know, not that we're perfect, but we don't normally screw things up within a week, right? You know, maybe over a 3, 6, 12 month period, we'll probably have some mistakes. We'll, you know, we might make some errors. We're human. But I don't know. It just felt like it was too quick, too soon. Not a lot of stuff. One of the hypotheses from one of our partners was that they just wanted to get a lot of the audits and the work and that type of stuff up front and never really had intentions of kind of sticking around. So I don't know. Again, I want to assume the best in people, but I really don't know.
Brutal. All right. Let's end on a, let's end on another note. I've been thinking a lot about children. Not that I want children right now, but like, I've been like, for some reason, I just love the idea of like a family, and I really want like 3 kids, okay. Like at least more than like 3 or more. Because like, I'm a family. You have a lot of brothers. I have a family. We're 4, right? My parents, yeah. And my brother. And like, it was cool. Like, I'm tight with everybody. But like, I remember it feeling kind of like, oh, I wish there was like more people here. You know what I mean? So like, and I do look forward to being a dad, and I see that in my future in the next couple of years. So I want to hear from you. Like, what are like the best and like worst parts of like being a dad? Like, what?
Yeah,
this will be fine.
Yeah, Mason's got baby fever is the name of the episode.
Ladies, if there's any female fans of Chase Diamonds, my DMs are open. Hit me up.
Hopefully we're better than my first million. I heard they've got like 4% or, you know, maybe 4 women in their whole audience. So hopefully this ratio is better. So let me know.
Yeah, if you're also, you have to be over like over 5'6", because I need tall daughters. Okay.
That's important. I don't know the sample size here, but we'll see. Best and worst parts. I think the best part, like my younger daughter right now is about 5 months, and she's at the point now where she's like giggling and laughing and smiling. And that's just really rewarding. So I think like the first time your kids do something is really cool. Like, it's really exciting when your daughter or your son walks or they do something, they try something. You know, yesterday, I went on a scooter ride with my daughter, and we were gone for like an hour and a half, and we met a bunch of neighbors that were a few streets over. And it's just crazy to hear her like communicate and talk. And she kept complaining, Dad, I want to be part of the conversation. No one's talking to me. So that was really sweet. I think that the best part is just like the everyday moments that are easy to take for granted. Like, I've really been trying to lean into and really try to be like hyper-focused. Like, my phone's literally been in sleep mode for 2 weeks, and I keep missing calls and texts. So I've been really present lately, which has been really nice. The worst parts are when your kids are hangry, just like humans, when your kids are hangry, it's hard because they can't regulate emotions, you know, so it's kind of like all heck breaks loose. And then like with the newborns,
all yeah. Heck breaks loose, bro.
Yeah. And then with the newborns, you know, often when my daughter's been sleeping better lately, just the lack of sleep is really hard. But that being said, like, guys, at least in my experience, have it so easy. For women, you know, for the wives, it is so much harder, way more work, and they do it without complaining. Like, I just have a lot more respect and admiration for my wife, my mom, for my grandma, from all the women in my life. It's really hard. Like, you know, a lot of these weekends, it's just been my wife and I all in, you know, haven't been really working much. And they are like really good days, but they're really long days. Like, the end of the day at like 8:30, 9 o'clock, like, my wife and I are just looking at each other like exhausted. So I think for every good, there's kind of some exhaustion, but it's a lot of fun.
Interesting. Man, that makes me happy. Yeah. I wish I could just like clone your kids and just like have them as my own.
Yeah, I got lucky.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. All right. Well, I think that's a good place to end it. Is there anything else you want to say?
No, this was great. This was fun. If you guys have made it this far, let us know. We appreciate you guys listening.
Yeah. Thanks, Jimmy, for giving Chase an opportunity. Chase, his future was looking hopeless. And then you came through and swooped in and gave him a deal. And now Chase is going to be all right.
Yeah, the future is bright. Mason, much love, brother. Cardinal Mason, every Thursday, by the way, he does a live copywriting class. How do they find it? Just, is it on your Twitter?
Go to freecopyclass.com and you can sign up there.
Oh, I didn't even know that. So freecopyclass.com?
Mm-hmm. I bought that. Yeah, baller, right?
I didn't even know that. Cool. Heck yeah. All right, guys. We'll talk soon. Yeah. Cheers.